with Sam Cedar.
The destiny of America is always safer in the hands of the people than in the conference rooms of any elite.
Sam Cedar.
They are unanimous in their hate for me, and I welcome their hatred.
We must guard against the acquisition of unwarranted influence, whether sought or unsought, by the military-industrial complex.
The Majority Report with Sam Cedar.
If I get the feeling you've been cheated.
It is Wednesday, March 18th, 2020. My name is Sam Cedar. This is the five-time award-winning Majority Report. We are broadcasting live steps and steps and steps away from the industrially ravaged Gowanus Canal in the heartland of America. That, of course, would be downtown Brooklyn, USA. Day two of our Majority Report social isolation. Starting a little late today on the program, Dave Weigel, Washington Post political correspondent on the zombie primaries yesterday. Also on the program today, primaries postponed in five other states. Congress now on to coronavirus phase three bill. Dealing with our crisis, it's clear our understaffed government is totally rudderless. Meanwhile, we were able to launch new sanctions against Iran, already devastated by coronavirus. Some good news, Dan Lipinski out in Illinois, as the Justice Democrats supported Mary Newman pulls out a victory in the Democratic primary. Courts close, but immigration courts still packing them in. And a secret federal plan predicts at least 18 months before this crisis ebbs. Meanwhile, around the country, reports of job losses and, of course, austerity. All this and more on today's program. Welcome, ladies and gentlemen. I want to apologize. We started a little late today. Still just working out the entire procedure here and the processes. I'm having to do a lot of stuff. And we have a fairly complicated show. And we've been contemplating, like, you know, going to technologies that are a little bit simpler. We are unable to stream our audio live today. I don't know if this, you know, I don't know how much, you know, on YouTube, for instance, people are aware of it, or on podcast, but we do something and have been doing something that's fairly unique in this space. I mean, I think TYT probably does something a little bit similar, but we do a live show that is on five or six different platforms, both video and audio. It streams to our own app, obviously to YouTube and Twitch and to Vimeo and to Periscope. And we also take phone calls and do live interviews. And, you know, when you have full team, everybody has their sort of silo, as it were, and it gets done. But when we do this, we're having to sort of recreate the entire workflow that we had established over the course of, I don't know, 3 or 4 years. And so it's a little bit tricky. I'm looking right now at the backdrop. I don't know how to work any computer programs, except for I somehow just sort of like, I take a guess, and then I get it launched. And so we're running OBS. I got to learn into the what that's about. And then, you know, we've got images and different elements that you start to realize as you do the show. Oh, I've never logged into my Dropbox on this computer. Or, oh, I need this program to bring the audio in because I'm playing it on this and because of that OS. And so it's a little bit tricky, but I appreciate your indulgence. I just don't like starting late and not being as prepared as I want to be. But we'll get there. Let's do this again. Yesterday we did some plugs and notices, and we had folks send in some notices. Basically what we're looking for is, you know, a lot of people are going to be hurting. A lot of people already are hurting from a financial standpoint. If you got a plug, you want something for us to plug, we will plug it for you. If there is a notice, if there's a plug, particularly of something that is, you know, set up online to help folks in your community, tell us what it is and we'll get the word out. And then some of these notices are just things that people think is important for other people to know. Right now, I'm not particularly editing them. I'm just pulling them. And if you send us an email at majorityreporters@gmail.com and put plugs and notices in the subject line, we will do it. One thing, and part of what I want to do here with this as well, is to, because between all of us on this show, we do so much reading that, you know, we come across these things. Now, I imagine many of you have seen this sort of email or text chain that's going around about a member of the Stanford Medical University or something to that effect. And all of that is not correct. That is not, I don't think it actually even came from anybody at Stanford. My understanding is that it's not something that you can rely on. That's the thing where you hold your breath for 10 seconds in the morning and that tells you if you have coronavirus or something to that effect, or drink warm water or on and on and on like that. That's just not, no, that apparently is nothing to be, there's nothing there that's worth you relying on. Let's put it this way. Also out there has been the claim that ibuprofen is dangerous to take if you have coronavirus, because apparently the inflammation that it suppresses is, I'm not exactly sure why. I've seen mixed things about this. I can tell you that it is a French study that is reporting that. Beyond that, there doesn't appear to be any data. So that's all I can tell you. I'm not a doctor. But I can tell you that there is a French study that's out there. Other people are saying it's not true. But there is, in fact, a legit French study that's out there that showed that. Now, this study is obviously just been done recently. There's also been reports, at least by Reuters, that coronavirus can be aerosolized. It can live in the air. It's not clear that anybody's caught it from it being the air, but that they have been able to measure that it does live in the air for some period of time, as opposed to droplets that have been, you know, projected when you cough. All I'm doing is just telling you I've read about a half a dozen varying competing things about it. And that's, you know, that's all the information I can give you. But I don't know. Hopefully that's helpful on some level. Minnesota yesterday announced that Governor Wallace has passed an executive order that unemployment insurance is waiving the standard 1 week waiting period to provide immediate relief due to the closing of many restaurants and entertainment venues. They'll also be providing unemployment to those who need to stay home due to our school closures or being sick, family members being sick instead of only being able to apply after being fired or laid off like usual. You can find out more information at UIMN.org. We should also say that Walls is suspending collective bargaining for public workers. That's part of our austerity packet. That is from Cody. This is from Nick. I live in Bend, Oregon. I donated platelets and plasma on Sunday. The people at Red Cross stated they are looking at having a 40% decrease in the number of usual donors here locally. Go to your local blood services website, see if you're a viable donor. Hospitals and clinics are going to be straining their blood product supplies during the COVID-19 weeks and months. There was also some report out there that you get your blood tested and that would be a way to test if you have COVID-19. Apparently, that is not the case. So those are our plugs and notices for Wednesday, March 18th. And send them in. If you have some that you think it's important for other people to know, send in majorityreporters@gmail.com. Put in the subject line, plugs and notices. We'll take a look at them. And we will get on that for you. We're running a little bit behind, so we won't play a clip before we get to Weigel. You know, we're going to massage the format of the show to see what is effective, and you know, bear with us, and we'll play around with that stuff. And also, I just want to, you know, say that I don't know how much longer we're going to have sponsors or the sponsors we have. A lot of them are web based, which is good, and presumably they'll be able to function, but we'll see. So in the meantime, definitely going to read these ads. And if you have the opportunity to support these sponsors of the show, by all means, do. Of course, if you don't. This is a weird time that we're entering. And, we have a story that from the New York Times about a federal document that basically talks about multiple different scenarios. And that in some instances, the best case scenario is that, you know, we're going to be dealing with this for an extended period of time. This is not going to be a 2 or 3 week thing. You know, South Korea went one way. We were 8 weeks behind or 6 weeks behind. I mean, really, the president responding, and we're going to play stuff. I mean, that just, it is, at one time, it's going to be really important to understand why this could be as devastating as it's going to be. And I think there's a lot of different factors involved in it, but we'll talk more about that later in the program. I should say, you're spending a lot of time in your home these days, and you're fixing it up. You're trying to make it look good. Well, don't let it go to waste by not including gorgeous lighting. Lamps Plus has been upgrading homes for decades as a leader in lighting innovation and product design expertise. Discover exclusive styles in lighting for every room. Chandeliers, outdoor lights, ceiling fans, they got everything. They also have furnishings and decor to complete the perfect look. You can customize your lighting, too, with over 100 colors. They have videos with design tips, inspirational photos with latest trends. There's no reason to get lighting anywhere else. Lamps Plus is the nation's largest lighting retailer with over, you ready for this? 55,000 designs, all from top brands, including Minka. Minka, as you know, is known for decorative pieces that blend function and style using innovative materials. In fact, I should have brought up my Lamps Plus lamp right now. I've mentioned it before. Sort of like understated styling. But for me, as you can imagine, I like stuff that is very highly functional. And this has a USB plug at its base. I love it. And right now, Lamps Plus is offering up to 50% off hundreds of lights, furniture, and decor during the biggest sale of the season from now until March 30th. That's up to 50% during the Lamp Plus half price days and sale through March 30th at lampsplus.com/majority. Start saving today at lampsplus.com/majority. What are we going to do here? Oh, okay. I'm going to take a quick break and try and remember how I do this. We're going to do this. Be right back. And this. And I will be right back. I haven't quite figured out how to play music from here. But we'll work on that. All right, right back after this. We are back. Sam Seder on the Majority Report on the phone. It is a pleasure to welcome back to the program Washington Post political correspondent Dave Weigel. Dave, how are you? Where are you right now?
I'm good. Although, as a big like Stephen King fan, I'm worried that going on a radio station means like a team of shock troops will break in and take it over. I mean, that's usually what happens in a pandemic. That's my only frame of reference is The Stand, basically. Other than that, I'm good. Yeah.
Good. Well, exactly. It is very strange times, and I think we're just at the the beginning of it, I guess. And well, gosh, it's really your whole plan of covering this political primary seems to be a little bit altered.
Yeah, I'm the real victim here. I just want to make that clear. Everything's fine, except I am no longer going to be for a little while. Or a long while, no longer zipping around the country to cover these races, because these races are, if sanity prevails, mostly going to be conducted via mail with no campaigning. So with some digital campaigning. So there's new stuff to cover, but the world of, you know, waking up at 4 a.m. in order to get on a flight between two businessmen who want to become best friends, that's over for now. So my last trip was to Illinois. I got back here Monday morning. I wrote about the Newman primary in the third House district, and that turned out to be a good story, but that was it.
All right, you're breaking up just a little bit. Let's go over, you know, what's happening last night. I mean, maybe we can have a little bit more of a meta conversation, too, because so much of what I have appreciated about your reporting over the years, particularly in terms of politics, is you're out there, you're talking to voters. And in my experience over, I don't know, I mean, I've been reading you in one form or another, whether it's like on email lists or your email blast or you're in the Washington Post or frankly, in other publications, you always seem to have a very good sense of what's happening on the ground. I imagine that is going to change. But before we get there, let's talk about what happened last night. There was supposed to be four primaries. There was three. I want to talk about Ohio in a second, because that's going to have implications, you know, down the road. I was surprised by the results in some of these primaries, you know, not the least of which the turnout.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I was watching that closely because it's one of the new factors we just didn't have reference for. So I was, again, in Illinois over the weekend in the Chicago area talking to Marie Newman and other candidates, and they had no idea what was going to happen to turnout. Newman's theory, she's the progressive who beat Dan Lipinski, was her voters were more likely to turn out. They were more intense. Lipinski was relying on Republican voters to just come out for fun and cross over and vote for him. And she was correct. She was basing it on just pure instinct, but she was correct. Turnout in that race was up over 2018, over the midterm, a little bit, and she won. However, turnout across the state was down about 20-25% since the last primary, and turnout was up in Arizona and Florida. But the context is super important here, because there. So, you know, knock on wood, hand to God, pick your cliche. Luckily, the states that voted yesterday have robust early voting, but Arizona and Florida, which are very old, if you haven't, you know, seen a 90 standup routine in a while. Lots of old people there, God's waiting room. They have really picked up early voting. I mean, so they have elections where more than half the vote is cast by people showing up to these precincts beforehand, getting mail ballots, et cetera. Like California, they have the same kind of pattern. And those states, Arizona and Florida, turnout was up from 16. Turnout was down in Illinois, which has early voting, but not quite the same tradition. It's still a, hey, everybody, the machine told you to come out and vote Tuesday, come out and vote Tuesday state. So turnout was down there in, I think, not down in a way that affects the outcome. I mean, maybe it shifted one or two delegates over there, but really the only data we have on this is that it was Joe Biden voters, not voters, who are more likely to be worried about the virus. They skew older. The turnout was suppressed by the virus a little bit. I think enough that we're not going to have another primary. I mean, we've got 3 months left. Probably not another primary unless there is a miraculous recovery from this virus that will be held mostly in mail, depending on how efficiently states.
All right, I'm sorry, Dave, you're breaking up a little bit. Did you just say that you don't anticipate any more in-person primaries, you know, barring any type of like a miracle, and that you think they will happen, but they'll all be by mail? Dave? I'm sorry, you're breaking up a little bit.
You can't hear me?
Yeah, sorry, you're moving around a little bit.
I'm not at the door. It's just working from home is fun. Oh, yes, now I think. Let me turn this off.
Dave is he's streaming.
Do you hear me now?
Yeah, that sounds great.
Do you hear me now?
Yeah, that's great.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, that's still stuff that we have to report out, but in the Senate, in the House, it's to just say, okay, we know how mail ballots work. We need to make more of them. We can cut through this problem. I mean, that's something that Oregon and Washington do to great effect. They've done it for years. There is a path to doing this. It is complicated. It might take longer to count stuff, but I think that is where we're heading. The only note of caution, I mean, I noticed Republicans were kind of giddily celebrating some election results in Pennsylvania yesterday, where turnout was way down for all the reasons to be discussed. Pennsylvania is a state that only has election day voting, no early voting, where absentee voting is uncommon. And so that's a state – that's one I would watch, where if Republicans in the legislature actually move to make the primary mail, or if they see an advantage in not doing it. I don't know. I just know that the tone they had was, I'd say, the least elegiac tone of anybody.
No, wait a second.
I mean, the Biden campaign and the Sanders campaign were sort of saying, well, it was complicated. Republicans were like, yeah, we beat them. they won one seat. Now, it was Republican hell, but they won one seat that Hillary Clinton had carried in 2016. So they kind of just spiked the football.
Wait a second. I'm sorry. So explain to me again what you're talking about. There was a race in Pennsylvania yesterday.
Right. Oh yeah. So there were some special elections in Pennsylvania for legislative seats, for House seats, and Republicans did pretty well, and they just kind of celebrated that they did well. They were not saying there was no I'm not trying to put too much stock in this. I'm saying this is moving very fast. It's up to the states to change these elections to ones more people can participate in from home. But in a state that has really bad participation rules, I mean, you need to show up in person on election day. Republicans are kind of happy that they won. So I'd keep an eye on Pennsylvania. That's one of those states where you've got a Republican legislature and Democratic governor, and let's see if they can agree on this. It's a mess. I mean, I think you're going to see some blue states that are yet to vote, like New York, like Connecticut, like Rhode Island. They might be a little bit more spring in the step of those legislators to just figure this out fast, because they've got until April, which feels like a long time. Isn't really.
Well, yeah, it's not that long. A couple of weeks away, and people, you know. People are still in the process. My guess is that people are still in the process of sort of like establishing a work routine, or, you know, contemplating what it's going to be.
Absolutely. And it's hard for people to process how their lives are going to change like this. I mean, I'm currently working from my house. There are people off their cars parked, or folks working out in the field.
You got really bad reception at your house, too.
I set this up perfectly where I have both a computer that needs to be repaired, Wi-Fi that does not actually work very well in the house, bad reception. Yeah, it just of good stuff.
The romantic life of the of the political reporter on the road, where you let everything at home go to pieces. Apparently, not necessarily the best way to prepare for a pandemic, is what you're saying.
Arguably, yeah.
All right. Well, let's talk a little bit about the results. In all those races, you know, the turnout. I guess I'm encouraged that there was high turnout in these states.
Right.
And like you say, they were early vote states. Sanders got pretty well beat in all of these states.
He did. I mean, he's one data point that I was putting together this morning was that he's not just lost the vote, because let's be fair, maybe some people stayed home yesterday that would have otherwise voted. But when it comes to delegates, he of the states that have already voted so far, he won 1,092 delegates last time. So they were held on different days, like California went last. But he won more than 1,000 delegates from this pool of states. And so far this year, we have to allocate probably 100 more delegates from the California other states. But he's won about 737 so far. So best case scenario, he's already about 200 delegates down from where he was last time, and he's not on a track to win. I mean, the states that are coming up, he again lost that pool of states because he lost New York, he lost Pennsylvania, he lost Connecticut, he lost Maryland. He lost a lot of big states that are still on the calendar, and he did better in states. Well, Wisconsin's the best, and Indiana are the best big primary states coming up for him. But he did. There's caucuses he did well in that are gone now. They're in race with primaries. He basically has a really grim couple of months ahead if he keeps running for president. And the question becomes, I mean, frankly, we as voters got used to primaries going on for a while. And the idea, and you saw this from kind of Nina Turner and other Bernie people over the last day, the idea that voters deserve a choice. But I mean, primaries are weird, and they you and I remember 2004 when John Kerry basically has the thing wrapped up by the end of February.
Yep.
In that race, you know, California didn't have a choice per se. The race was over by the time to vote. But that is like the norm that we got past because of these long primaries. And I think the Sanders campaign is adjusting. There's not there's what they say versus what their supporters say online. For supporters online, I think there's still kind of there's less of a hope that voters will change their minds and more that Biden will melt down. So Sanders should stay in the race for that reason. And, you know, that's getting a little bit more out loud and explicit. But it doesn't change the fact that Sanders is doing much worse than he did last time.
Right. And it seems to me that, that you suspend, you know, people suspend their campaign for that last scenario you're talking about. And in that instance, he's going to have the plurality of delegates, or at least the majority of delegates that have not been taken up. And I mean, I don't know how one would work that out.
Biden's on track to have a majority of delegates, and if stuff wasn't delayed, if we had Ohio yesterday, if we had Puerto Rico and Indiana this month, he'd probably clinch the majority of delegates. If nothing changed, he kept winning the same demographics, probably clinch it early May.
Right.
After Kentucky votes, he was on track to do that. So he was going to get a majority. The whole broker convention thing is that's not going to happen.
Right. And he's got what, about 1,200 delegates at this point?
Yeah. So everyone counts them differently, which makes, I mean, frankly, something I always think about this process is anything that's complicated can look like the party is trying to pull a fast one.
Right.
But it's just that this is a messy system where each state has its own election process. Some of them have terrible, clunky ones. Some of them have very smooth ones, like Minnesota. Singling out them out for praise, they're always good at this. And so it takes a while for there to be like a verified vote count. And then when the vote count's verified, the party says, okay, here's how the delegates went this way, according to each congressional district. And this is the risk that, frankly, the party seems to be avoiding if it's a Biden victory. That if this was still like a 50-50 race or a five candidate race and campaigns were pushing to June, there literally wouldn't be enough time for people to to vote and have those votes allocated for delegates because the convention would be a couple weeks later.
I mean, I can only imagine if there was if we had still 6-7 people in the race, right? Like, I mean, it would have been nuts. And just remind people, all the delegates, according to the DNC rules, which of course you could waive in this instance, need to be right in by June. We have
June 7th is the key date. Yeah.
So, I mean, give me your sense. Like you say, like I mean, I don't feel like there's necessarily mixed messages coming out of the Sanders campaign as to what they're going to do, but it does sort of feel like there is sort of there's not full-throated messages coming out. Is that a fair assessment?
That's fair to say. So the campaigns don't need to tell you everything they're thinking. It'd be awesome if they did. But you can tell from the tone they're taking, how they're looking at the race. Sanders did not mention the primaries at all in his address last night. His campaign only said that he was reassessing his campaign today. They emerged to knock down this false report that he was suspending. He's not suspending right now. But that's all they clarify. Not it's on to Alaska and Hawaii and let's win this thing. It was we're looking at the campaign, talking to supporters, things of that nature. And so it is the way you would talk if you're wrapping this up. The problem is that, one, he's losing, but a problem for him going into the rest of the primaries is that he indeed has very well thought out policies, even if you think they're too expensive. As his address last night showed, he's not really interested in just the here's how we're going to get through this as a country, right, you know, pat on the back speech. He sees a role for himself as a candidate or a politician with a lot of name recognition and a lot of clout, proposing big ideas that would restructure the economy. And what happens to that if he drops out of the race? What happens if he does not get more delegates and he's just got a pool? I mean, right now he's on track to have about a quarter. If he drops, he maybe gets a quarter of delegates less. Not really a strong negotiating hand. So he is – I think the question for him, from the people around him I've talked to, is he's probably not going to win. What does he do that, one, gets his voice the most volume and, elects Joe Biden? Because he has a lot of supporters, and you can see them all on Twitter if you want. I don't know why you want to do that to yourself, who are already saying – and give him some data to deal with this. I mean, if he's losing – somebody might say they're 100% not going to vote for Biden today and vote for him later. But they're all saying, you know, I was screwed.
Oh, you're breaking up a little bit. I mean, I think,
yeah.
Well, I mean, my sense is, you know, first off, like with the classic caveat that, you know, Twitter, I think, can seem like it represents more people than it does. But with that said, like, you know, and this is I did Chris Hayes's program again, at midnight when they let people on who are sympathetic to Sanders on that network. And I did it from here, which was an odd sensation. But I guess, you know, one thing that people forget is Joe Biden, and you correct me if I'm wrong here with this. The vast amount of exit polling showed that people were not voting on a set of policies, that they were voting. They were willing to say, like, in fact, I'm not even voting based upon who I agree with. I'm voting on the person who I think can win. And I think everybody saw that it wasn't until Clyburn said, I think Joe Biden can win, that he did well, you know, that he went back up in South Carolina. And it wasn't until the entire field, essentially, of candidates, short of Marianne Williamson, backed him, that people got that, you know, were basically told, like, oh, the professionals say that Joe Biden's the guy who can win. All right. You know, he was vice president. I buy it. Sanders, it seems to me, is the only candidate in the race, but also was The only one who had was attracting voters, or I should say, the one who was attracting voters who were voting for him because of what he was, you know, what he was advocating. And in terms of the raw numbers, right? I mean, there was really nobody close to him in that regard. And I would put Joe Biden in that, in that as well. Sanders, maybe we're only talking about 25-30% support, depending, across the board, a little bit more, actually, if you look at it in terms of delegates. Right. But the vast majority of people who are voting for him were doing so because they were aligned with his sort of proposals and perspective on how we should be governed. And that has different implications than, like, how does Pete Buttigieg get out of the race?
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
I think you're right. It has nothing ideological. And I think it's wrapped in a way that has been helpful to Biden. I mean, in a really grim sense, the premise of the Sanders campaign and the Warren campaign, to an extent, they're different in ways they don't go through, is that, yes, Trump is president. That's because of things that went terribly wrong for decades and that we need a president to completely undo and rethink as he expands the welfare state. The premise of the Biden campaign is we basically were on the right track under Barack Obama. Things were going well. We need to get rid of this president and then build on what we were doing. And build on can mean expanding things, but not really rethinking things completely. Even gun laws are basically, let's go back to what we had in the 90s. So the Biden premise was not as exciting, did not appeal to young people. I think especially the people under 40 who have, I'm one of them kind of, I've lived through 9/11 and a financial crash and a pandemic. And it does not seem, if you look at the young people joining up political parties, all this, there's just a lot of skepticism about the political class. However, it's just kind of objectively true that when Biden was vice president, his former chief of staff led this Ebola response that was effective, even though conservatives thought it would not be, and that they put in place a pandemic relief network. And so he has the story that I think was most compelling for primary voters at this moment. It was already pretty compelling. And now it's basically, well, yes, if the choice is between let's try some new stuff and let's go back to what let us not live in our houses, afraid to go out, literally, then let's go to that. But again, if you're Sanders, the worry you have about Biden is that he is not by nature a big picture politician. He is right. A let's come together and fix this guy. You don't have, if you're Sanders, any control over what he says. You've just been running against him, but you might have some worry that he's going to get outflanked by the president. And let's look at the cash payments as an example. It was Ro Khanna, a co-chair of the Sanders campaign, and Tim Ryan, who's endorsed Biden. They introduced legislation a week ago for immediate cash payments to people to get them through the pandemic. Democratic leadership in the House, Nancy Pelosi, was kind of namby-pamby about it, worried about it, because they've just got scar tissue that a lot of young people don't have, which is, oh no, we'll be accused of being too spendthrift on big things. You had the president embrace a version of that. And so there, I think the worry for Biden critics is, okay, the guy might be winning, but is he adroit, sharp enough to compete with Trump? And you're kind of arguing from a position of weakness. This guy was definitely adept enough to beat Bernie Sanders by bigger margins than Hillary Clinton did.
Yes. I mean, but let me put a little more meat on those bones, because to the extent that he has a blind side, Biden does, and he's, to use a basketball metaphor, I can go pretty strong to my right, but I'm not so good on my left. And I think Joe Biden has that same problem, not so much in basketball. I'm not sure he could do right or left, but his imagination in terms of going left is a little bit weak. And Donald Trump, I think, part of the fear that people have had is that Donald Trump is going to outflank him on the left. Now, I think I think everything that's going on and what's going to happen with the economy is going, I don't even think, like, it's almost like we can't even have this conversation pricing that in, because, 3 days from now, it could be dramatically different. I mean, just based upon the pace of things that are going. I guess I guess, you know, one of the arguments that I would have liked to have seen Sanders make during the debate, and I imagine that on some level, they on this campaign are still sort of like, and Sanders is sort of contemplating this, is that like, even if we could, you know, even if there was a full desire by everybody to go back to a time, and there was a time where like, without Donald Trump, everything was fine, it's quite possible at the end of this coronavirus thing that does not exist anymore, right? Like that a prolonged, deep recession. I mean, we're already talking, you know, Mnuchin's out there saying that 20% of the people could lose their jobs. You know, the Great Depression was 25%. And if you got Mnuchin saying this at this point, like, we just don't know. And so at the end of this, there's going to be something. You know, it's one thing to say we're going to go back and sort of like take the stain off of the city and, you know, pull down the banners that this guy put up and the murals. It's another to say like, oh, my God, all the buildings have been destroyed. We're going to have to build. We're going to have to rebuild this. Not totally. The infrastructure is still going to be there on some level, but we're going to have to rebuild this from, you know, ground floor. And
right. And,
and we also know that Joe Biden, when he did sort of, you know, not so much in the debate, but in the past, admit that he was, you know, for cutting Social Security. What was the reason? It was because of deficits. What kind of deficits? Like, what? Like, if you are susceptible to deficit pressure, what's it going to look like if you become president, you know, in January 21st, 2021? Yeah. I mean,
well, you can tell with like the brio that Sanders has as he talks about this stuff, because you and I lived through the Tea Party, and the first organizing by the Koch groups and all that around the Tea Party was there is a economic crisis that's driving unemployment above 10%. The Democratic president wants to spend stimulus money to fix that, and the Tea Party said no, the government spent too much money. It doesn't take a huge imagination, certainly a smaller one that takes deal with the pandemic, to imagine, you know, it's February 2021. President Biden is trying to pass basically the same stimulus package that President Trump is. And there's another uprising of people saying, no, they're good, the Democrats again. And so that's the worry is does Joe Biden have the antibodies to deal with that? Because in the past, in the 90s, and I should say that there's that 1995 video that Sanders used in his campaign ads of Biden talking about Social Security. That was, he was in cycle. He was on the ballot in 1996 and Delaware was still a swing state. I'm not saying, and he was right to do that. I'm just saying his politics were, I want to get reelected politics. So, how do you prevent him from getting in there and making Obama's mistakes? And the question, that's a big question. Do you do it by continuing to run against him? Do you do it by what seems like in a very soft way Elizabeth Warren is doing, which is saying, all right, I'm off the field. Let's talk. Here's a bunch of stuff you should do that would make you more popular. I think that's those are the only options left if Biden's going to be the nominee.
And I would add that there's another layer of complexity to it, because I think you're right. I think Warren is trying to do that in a sort of a softer way. But there's another layer of complexity here, because by the time Warren left the race, you know, her voters were disappointed. But there was the disappointment seemed to me to be more about Elizabeth Warren is a very adept politician and administrator and executive, et cetera, et cetera. And we're going to lose out on that. As opposed to, I think, Sanders' support is, you know, more attached to specific policy measures, right? You know, I mean, I think with Elizabeth Warren, it was like, she's got a plan. What's the plan? Well, I trust her. It doesn't matter. You know, I'm sure it's good.
Well, she didn't have them. I mean, she and Sanders both have pretty comprehensive coronavirus plans.
Absolutely. But my point is,
part of the crisis to build a bunch of, I mean, basically build a bunch of new platforms into the system so that, okay, well, things go bad again. We got this trigger for unemployment. We got this trigger for student loans, et cetera, et cetera.
Without a doubt. I mean, I guess my point is that I think that Warren's support was more a function of what people thought that she could do, and Sanders' support is more a function of the things, right, that they mm-hmm. perceived would come with that. And so on some level, Biden, you know, I don't know if people will fully trust Biden, this and that, but it seems to me that Biden needs to, you know, he adopted Elizabeth Warren's bankruptcy plan. It's not like it didn't appear that he had depth in terms of knowing what it was. But I think it was like signaling like, hey, I'm embracing Warren. But I don't think that same dynamic will satisfy some segment of Bernie voters, and maybe ones that you and I never even come in contact with, or maybe you did on the trail, but they're not on Twitter. Yeah. They're not. They are just like, and maybe they can't even articulate necessarily the specifics of the plan, but that they were more interested in, like, you know, sort of like what those material benefits could be. And we could be talking about a very small slice of people, but you know, that's all it took in 2016.
I mean, the model here, if you're on the left, is honestly what the right did with Donald Trump, which was Donald Trump wanted to be president for, I mean, he had a lot of agenda items that the Republican party didn't share. He had some they did, but he didn't really fill in a lot of his thinking on, you know, abortion, on judges. He had a record that was kind of all over the place. And so what the right did with Trump said, okay, you need us to win. Here is a list of judges you're going to appoint. Here's who you should be making your undersecretaries. I mean, to the point where we're now, it's basically just like a pipeline from conservative organizations to the White House. I think that is – now, the left does not have that. It's been trying to build that something that robust for years. And frankly, some of the stuff on the left that fits that bill, like the Center for American Progress, I mean, people who vote for Sanders don't like or trust it or consider it liberal. But I mean, that is the model, I think, if you're on the left and you want to shape Biden. It's basically, okay, you're going to get the presidency. Let's make sure you do not choose like a deficit hawk, bland running mate. I'm not thinking of anyone particular here, but I mean, both people. Well, he said he'll choose a woman to not rule out people to judge. Amy Klobuchar did say at points that the Democrats need to be taken, you know, more seriously on the deficit, be the party reduction. You got a couple months where this candidate who did not expect to win like this fast has not scaled up to kind of fill it in. I think you can be despondent about it. I've seen some people on Twitter just saying, oh, well, it's Biden. He's never going to listen to any of the progressive ideas. And he look at Mitch Trump and say, oh, I mean, if you personnel is policy, and if you get like Elizabeth Warren's list of versus the Biden campaign's list, and you have a more progressive presidency than Obama. But you know, people are understandably despondent because what it looked like could happen even a month ago was the Bernie Sanders brain trust taking over the presidency.
Yep.
And the entire old order being swept away. And that's just not what people voted for.
Yeah, I mean, I don't see how you can argue against that. I mean, and there, you know, I think it's unfortunate, and but it is what it is. And the question is how much. And I think the analogy with Trump is apt, because I think in many respects, Biden at this point is a bit of a cipher. I mean, I think that, like, you know, he had sort of standard issue politics, and I think he was certainly out in the forefront of trying to cut Social Security during the Obama administration, right? I mean, and he certainly went behind Harry Reid's back to make deals and empower Mitch McConnell. I don't have a sense that he, you know, learned some type of grand lesson from that. I don't, frankly, anticipate that. You know, a guy Biden's age or Bernie's age, for that matter, are going to learn, you know, new tricks, as it were. But I also think that there is a bit of a vacuum that Biden, you know, creates, because I just don't see this guy as vigorously like, I'm finally going to get to institute the blankety blank that I've been thinking about for, you know, 40 years in government. He doesn't have one of those.
No, I mean, when he released, I remember his climate plan, a lot of green groups were pleasantly surprised. But then the more activist ones were like, where that, okay, but this is less ambitious than Bernie. And also, who wrote this and where did it come from? It was a lot of caveat emptor, because
right.
It wasn't like, what is this? What is the assurance? And I think this is where the Obama experience burns people. Obama came in during a crisis and appointed the people who said, we're the crisis fixers. We just happen to be associated with neoliberal ideas that you didn't run on. So that's the worry, is people fear a repeat of that. And what is the best way to mobilize against that? It's a big question, but it's not a silly question. I mean, because you do see the chatter from people who are worried, and the specific worry is this, right? I don't think I'm misstating it, is that Biden would win and then he didn't deliver on many of his priorities. He'd be wiped out one term by a more conservative Republican than Trump, who's better at this.
I mean,
that's the worry. But I mean, he...
Tom Cotton...
he doesn't want to lose either, so who knows
right.
what he does.
Tom Cotton was on, was on Fox again, sort of like criticizing the Democratic bill that came out. I guess it was maybe phase two or whatever. They've now passed two bills, and criticizing it from the left, on the specifics of the economics. And so that's a real danger. And, it's really a question now. And the other thing I think that worries folks is like, where's Joe Biden gotten all his money? He's gotten it from those same type of like folks who came in and told Obama how to fix things. And invariably they all, it would be like me consulting with Biden going like, well, here's the key to the economy. YouTube shows. You've got to give a lot of subsidies to YouTube shows. And that's,
right.
And that's, I've been working in YouTube for a long, I would say radio and YouTube. That's the most important thing you can do for the economy. So let me ask you this. Specifically, the question of people who are like, Bernie's got to get out because,
right.
It's going to hurt the general election. Like, I understand why people sort of say that in a knee-jerk fashion, but it does not appear to me that Bernie is pursuing any of the critiques at this point, and he didn't in the last debate, that could be weaponized by Donald Trump. And that I'm just not clear. It's one thing. It's like, oh, we don't want to have to spend resources in going to New York State and to going to whatever, to Pennsylvania and this and that. Well, I mean, who's expending resources now? Right. Like, I mean, you can run ads and Biden's been able to do it without ads. Like, I'm not clear that this inhibits. There's an ounce of inhibition in terms of Biden if he's ultimately the nominee, which I think it's a pretty good strong sense that he will be. If that in any way inhibits the race against Trump. And frankly, I'm like, if you figure out a way of integrating the stuff that Bernie ran on, at least to some extent, not because, Bernie deserves it or something like this, but because you want to win in the fall and you want to bring these, the energy of these people along with you. That to me seems like the only option if you want a net gain going to the general.
Yeah. And this is what Warren was trying to do, not just on the way out, but when she was persistently facing electability questions, he would say, look, I mean, in addition to me wanting to pass a wealth tax, it's like 70%. And it's wealth tax is pretty clear. It's not like Medicare for All, or I do think there's like some wiggle room where people think Medicare for All means that they just go on their grandparents' Medicare and don't pay any more taxes. Like, leaving that aside, there are ideas that are very popular that Joe Biden has not embraced, and he has. I mean, if you're on the left and you want to be moving him, he moved an amendment in about 48 hours. Confronted ACLU volunteers of a Hyde Amendment on, banning the use of taxpayer funds for Medicaid for abortions, and then got some pressure and then back down. And he has been showing just this unusual willingness to back off positions he's had for a while, not in the Pete Buttigieg way where he's like a, stem cell just adopting to whatever seems to be
right
working at the moment, but in somebody saying, well, after 50 years in politics, I agree that I was wrong for 49 of those years. So it's a big question. Where else can you put, if you're on the left, where else can you push him? And how do you do it? Because, like, no one likes to be told how to behave online. And I think a lot of the attacks on kind of left Twitter and dirtbag Twitter have been not in the best faith. You know, right. Hey, you're making me feel bad, therefore. But it's a question to deal with. You know, do you, obviously there are some people who are never ever going to suck up to Biden, never get a meeting, never be part of that establishment. There are going to be people who threaten to stay home, to vote green. The usual, basically, of writing it off and saying there's no point anymore. So in 2016, Hillary Clinton was very worried about those voters. She adapted by taking on Sanders' health care plan and abandoning the TPP. So she changed in what was a weaker position than Biden, but she had a bigger edifice of supporters. I mean, but she had collected for 40 years this network of people who were going to be – everyone knew who was going to be in the Clinton administration if she won. We have some ideas of who's going to be in the Biden administration. But the opportunity there is that, you know, he's got all these – kind of policy TBD slots or cabinet member secretary TBD positions, and if you run in and fill them, how do you convince them that you're the person to fill them? One thing that I think people will do is say, like, look, I don't like Trump. I've convinced me to vote in Florida for this guy because it doesn't sound like either president's going to wipe the way. That's an issue I bring up because Biden doesn't seem to be bending on that. He does seem to be part.
Wait,
of the
I'm sorry. Say that issue again because you broke up on student loans.
On student loans,
right?
I mean, the promise of getting them all forgiven, student debt forgiven, was probably dead with the Sanders campaign. But can Biden be moved on that? That's an issue I'd look to because he has the sort of let's worry about the budget. Let's worry about the budget. You know, let's forgive debt only for people who do service, et cetera. If you can push him during this crisis, when I think there's probably going to be, there already is pressure to stop forcing loan payments as long as people might not be at work. Where can you move him? And you'll find out pretty soon if he's religiously attached to this sort of fiscal discipline or if he can be moved. And we're going to find out, you know, week by week.
You know, it's interesting because you were saying earlier that you were breaking up just a little bit, but you were saying earlier that, you know, it took like 15 minutes worth of pressure and Biden basically reversed himself on the Hyde Amendment vote. And I do think there is a quality about Biden. And I let me reiterate, I just don't know that the guy believes that strongly in anything. I think that he has this muscle memory where it's like, wait a second, forgive a loan? I represented him, you know, the credit card.
I think that's very true.
I represented the credit cards and the banking industry for my entire career. Everything I know about loans is you do not forgive loans. You know, like you never let the debtor off the hook. It's always the creditors. You know, I mean, it's always the, you never let the debtor off the hook. And I think that is like, I almost think that like he could be, you know, semi-conscious and would still, you know, veto a bill about that. But everything else, I think he's just sort of like, I don't know. There's a quality of like Chris Matthews, you know, sign off to Joe Biden, which is like, I have no idea what's going on around me here. I have a vague sense if I was wrong about a lot of stuff for the past 40 years. And, you know, okay. But the other problem is like, who's going to be standing next to him saying, okay, yeah, you're right. You were wrong about all that, but this is what you should do next.
Yeah. I think there's going to be a lot of that, and I don't know what the best tone is to work on Biden people. But like, this is a campaign that, in the midst of winning the primaries, hired a new campaign manager. I mean, this is a campaign that I think did look at what had happened, and you see a little bit of kind of you know, mouthiness and gloating on Twitter. Like, the campaign was retweeting all these Biden's dead takes after Super Tuesday. The campaign, you know, spokes folks on Twitter, but. This is a campaign that also realized it was getting blown out. And James Clyburn told them they were doing things wrong. They had a bad strategy as part of his conversation with Biden. and he won out. So they've restructured the campaign, hired somebody who Jennifer Mallie Dillon, who's running Beto's campaign. Everyone will kind of chuckle and say, "Oh, Beto didn't win." It's like a lot of people don't win. It doesn't mean that the staff was incompetent.
Right.
I think even people who were happy that Elizabeth Warren lost looked at what some of her team did in terms of raising money and all that, and they wouldn't say, "Oh, never hire them again." So Biden's already shown that he knows his campaign needs to get adjusted. He can get very cocky. That's where he's been in some of these one-on-one confrontations with voters. And he does seem to be curtailing that instinct a little bit when it comes to the campaign staff. So who knows what would happen with the higher level policy decisions.
All right. Well, so right now we don't really know what's happening going forward, right? We have these different primaries that have basically punted a little bit and we're anticipating vote by mail. So just all right, give me just like, I don't know, just a quick wrap up at this point. Like, what do are you going to be reporting on the sort of like the new innovations of how you campaign via, you know, with all your campaign staff theoretically staying at home? I mean, I imagine if I was working on the Biden campaign, you know, I would have, a whole team that's just there with like taking everybody's temperature if they get within 10 feet of Biden. I mean, I don't mean to be flip about this, but like, there are predictions that 60% of the population is going to get this. And he's not well situated to get it, nor, you know, same with Sanders for that matter.
No, completely. And neither of them is doing much, is going to do in-person campaigning for a while. Traditional political rallies, things of that nature are suspended for a while. There's not actually.
And they're not sending out canvassers either, are they?
No, neither campaign. So when I was in Illinois, the campaigns had transitioned to say, call people at home. Don't go out in person and canvass. With some success. I mean, in Marie Newman's case, that was successful. She turned out her base with phone calls and convinced a lot of people to vote early. So
that's
what I'm going to cover is, I think, frankly, kind of a flashback to campaigning around 1900, where there were political parties and they spent money and there were candidates and they gave speeches, but they did not do a lot of in-person campaigning. You might see the image of Joe Biden, speaking to you from Wilmington, Delaware from time to time for the next couple of weeks, or from Washington in settings with not many people in them. And that is, frankly, I think based on the way this campaign has gone, that is good for him. I'm not trying to say, oh, because he needs the safety net because he'll make mistakes. I'm saying he was not a guy who drew out gigantic crowds. The president is a candidate who needs those crowds to build his base and can't do it. I mean, left out of this whole conversation is the president was, remember, he was doing this before each of these primaries until Michigan, making sure he had a rally the night before were met with maximum attention, and they would take the names of people who came in, they would contact them. Even if you signed up for a Trump rally and you didn't show up, which lots of people did, tens of thousands of people would do, they would collect your information and
Oh, you've broken up. But what you were basically saying,
that's a campaign that helps Biden more than Trump.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think it helps Biden, and I think it hurts Trump in this regard. Yeah. All right. So, last thing, you know, tell us about the Lipinski race, because this is a big race. Justice Dems, if I remember correctly, the Justice Dems was really poo-pooed by folks who were supporting Lipinski. This is not, you know, the only race that reminds me of was like Cuellar and Cisneros, and Cisneros came up short. That did not happen in Illinois last night. And Lipinski is just like, he was almost like a parody of a bad Democrat.
He was, and he also got very cocky. So Lipinski, he inherited his seat from his father, literally. His father, William Lipinski, longtime congressman, Chicago political player, retired. Without getting in the weeds, you know, the switcheroo where you can retire when it's too late for anyone else to come on the ballot to replace you. He did that. So he basically gave the seat to his son. His son withstood several primary challenges, and his savior was always voters, lower information voters, would come out and say, oh, my congressman, okay, and vote for him, unaware that he was very conservative. So he narrowly beat Newman by 2 points in 2018. I think that gave a lot of false confidence to Democrats. Like, oh, no one, if he can survive, anyone can survive. And they just kind of slept on Ocasio-Cortez. In the run-up to this, he just did not behave like a candidate who was trying to win Democrats anymore. He had a strategy that I think was actually undone by Trump, because Trump was trying to encourage Republicans to vote in the Republican primary. So in Illinois, there's no party registration. You show up and say, I want a red ballot or I want a blue ballot. And in 2018, a lot of Republicans came out to vote for Lipinski and saved him. This year, turnout was up overall. Slightly up. Newman's vote was up by more. And he just didn't deliver. He just collapsed in.
Oh, we lost you again.
Suburbs. The rest of the district is suburbs, and he lost badly there. And so he just kept casting conservative votes, spoke at the March for Life, made these decisions that just were advertising the reasons why Democrats would want to vote against.
Right. And there was one other race that was slated to happen that was sort of similar, and that was the Morgan Harper. And I can't remember who she was challenging, but in Ohio,
Joy Speedy.
Yeah. In Ohio. And, I guess we're going to have to wait on that. I mean, if that's by mail in, who does that help? Do you have a sense?
If it's by mail in, I think it does help. I don't know, because I was in Illinois, but I wouldn't have been surprised Lipinski won yesterday because of people being nervous about coming out in a mail ballot situation. I think with nothing else on there, I mean, there's an opportunity for the left to really prioritize that race, and to contact people in the district. But yeah, I think in general, when left-wing candidates aren't able to go out and campaign and canvass, it is going to be harmful to them. So Morgan Harper probably did pretty well, and all the votes that have been cast in Ohio, Georgia, et cetera, so far, they're just kind of waiting to be counted when the election's over. Probably did okay in those, but it's a real question, and that I think is a big question for the left going forward. Is if there's not really a point to the Sanders campaign beyond getting delegates to sit in the committee room in Milwaukee, what are their next priorities? And the situation has bought some time if you want to go focus on some down ballot races.
Right. Very important. Dave Weigel, real pleasure. Thank you so much, man. Good luck with your Wi-Fi.
All right, Dave. It's obviously pretty terrible, but I'll live. All right, stay safe.
All right, you too. Bye-bye. Dave Weigel, everybody. Boop, boom. There he goes. Thank you for your indulgence on his connection. We are a lot of times in that situation. We have backup plans, and he would have been at the office, et cetera, et cetera. And but always has a very educated perspective on these things. Not literally an education. I don't know. I mean, I presume he went. I don't know, but he's actually gone out and done the work. And he really does have a very good sense of these things. And he started in not full on right wing media, but sort of adjacent there. So his perspective, he's pretty open and pretty, good about being able to talk to a whole range of people and, in assessing where they're at. Folks, we've got a couple of things that we're working on in terms of the tech that's going to sort of like open this up and bring in, you know, Matt and Brendan and Jamie and sometimes Michael. And it's going to take us a couple of days to get this set up. And Mike from PA offered on Twitter or an email to help me with, you know, OBS, and different people are reaching out. And so we will get there. Really appreciate your patience. On Thursdays now, it used to be Thursdays, Michael would do the show. We're not really sort of set up to be able to do that now. And I don't know. I'll talk to Michael about it. But I think probably what will happen is I may just devote Thursdays to taking calls, maybe playing some clips, some video clips. I don't know yet. I'm not 100% sure what we're going to do. But we will see. I don't know. We'll figure it out this afternoon. Tomorrow may be different than other Thursdays. Maybe we'll run a pre-tape, or maybe we'll just do a couple of things at the beginning, because as I get the notion that we've got to settle in here, I've got to make sure that my kids are – right now we have my 14-year-old is now a teacher of my 7-year-old, and oddly enough, they're not stopping to – they're not – their fighting is not stopping when they're in the classroom. So just a reminder, it is your support that makes this show possible. Our advertising, I think we're going to start to see a drop off, frankly. Not terribly surprising. I think we're going to see it drop off on YouTube in terms of advertising. I've seen a little bit of hints of that. I think we're going to see it in terms of the live reads. Hopefully some of them have been locked in, but we will see about that. We have a lot of members who are under financial stress now, and tomorrow hopefully is a day where I'll be able to, you know, hook up those people who have canceled. If you need to cancel, you can cancel and send us an email at majorityreporters@gmail.com. Cancel and send us an email saying, like, I had to cancel, but would like access, and we'll take care of you. It's, you know, have a little bit of patience and we'll get there. We will not lock anybody out for financial reasons. If you are somebody who does not have, you know, any type of financial stress because of what's going on, you were already working at home, or maybe you, I don't know, you're in the hand sanitizer business or whatever it is. You enjoy the show and you can, you're able to support it. Much appreciated. We're going to be here. We're going to get better at doing this, from in this way. Maybe I'll interview my kids, but we'll come up with a couple other, stuff that we can do, some fun stuff. So join the majorityreport.com. Where you go to support the show. You can do a one-off donation or you can sign up. Also, listen to the AM Quickie. Gives you your news in the morning. Just 6-7 minutes. Good way to get up, have a little bit of coffee. We're putting it out every morning at 8 a.m. So it'll be there when you wake up. And support that show if you can. Also, don't forget... TMBS happened last night. I don't know why I'm looking at my IMs as if Matt's going to nod back to me, but TMBS Michael Brooks Show happened last night. You can check that out at patreon.com/TMBS. Emma Viglin was on. You can see it on YouTube at youtube.com Michael Brooks Show. And also check out Nomiki Kant's show. The Nomiki Show is available at patreon.com/TheNomiki Show. And she's also, I think she's getting on a lot on YouTube now. Everybody's sort of like, you know, changing up their formats a little bit here and there. The Antifada still going. Soon we'll have technology where we can hear Jamie. She's probably talking to her computer right now. But you can go to patreon.com/TheAntifada. And of course, Literary Hangover, the YouTube and the Patreon. And I know Matt's got a bunch of stuff up, and Brendan apparently is not going to be doing any more live shows with his band. Means and Ways is on a temporary hiatus. All right, we're going to take a quick break, head into the fun half. We've got a bunch of clips for you. And... we'll talk about stuff, you know, like I'm still ramping up a little bit on being able to catch up on the number of stories that I want to catch up on. Talk about the various stimulus packages that are being planned. I mean, things are just moving so quickly that it is tough to keep track. And but we will endeavor to do so. Quick break, fun half. I'll be right back. So what I will do is hopefully you'll hear this. Let's see if this works. Left is best. Jamie and I may have a disagreement.
Yeah, you can't just say whatever you want about people just because you're rich.
I have an absolute right to mock them on YouTube.
He's up there buggy whipping like he's the boss.
I am not your employer.
You know, I'm tired of the negativity.
I'm sorry. I didn't mean to upset you. You're nervous. You're a little bit upset. You're riled up.
Yeah, maybe you should rethink your defense of that, you fucking idiots.
We're just going to get rid of you.
All right.
But dude.
Dude.
You want to smoke this joint?
Yes.
Do you feel like you are a dinosaur?
Some good shit.
Exactly. I'm happy now.
It's a win-win.
It's a win-win-win.
Oh, hell yeah.
Now listen to me. 2, 3, 4, 5 times. 847-906-501-457. 2, 38, 56, 27. 1/2, 5/8, 3.9 billion.
Wow.
He's the ultimate math nerd.
Don't you see?
Why don't you get a real job instead of spewing vitriol and hatred, you left-wing Limbaugh?
Everybody's taking their dumb juice today.
Come on, Sammy.
Dance, dance, dance.
Ooh. Rand Paul.
I had my first post-coital scene with a woman. I'm hoping to add more moves to my repertoire. All I have is the dip and the swirl.
Fine, we can double dip.
Yes, this is a perfect moment.
No.
Wait, what?
You make under $1 million a year. You're scum. You're nothing.
Excuse me? Fuck you, you fucking liberal elite. I think you belong in jail.
Thank you for saying that, Sam. You're a horrible, despicable person.
All right, gonna take a quick break. I want to take a moment to talk to some of the libertarians out there. Take whatever vehicle you want to drive to the library. What you're talking about is jibber jabber.
Classic. I'm feeling more chill already.
Good.
Donald Trump can kiss all of our asses.
Hey, Sam. Hey, Andy. You guys ready to do some evil?
Hitler was such an idiot.
I think I might be a Nazi.
Agree.
No.
Death to America.
You.
Yes.
Wow.
Wow, that's weird. No way! Unbelievable. This guy's got a really good hook.
Throw our hands up. Ooh.
Wow.
But Sam, I gotta get off.
No worries. Let's I wanna just flesh this out a little bit. I mean, look, it's a free speech issue. If you don't like me.
Hey, shut up!
Thank you for calling into the Majority Report. Sam will be with you shortly.